the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Sunday, June 12th. Support for this reading comes from the DuPaco R. W. Hafer Foundation. I'm Jackie.
I'm Pat.
And here is our first story.
Tourism rebounds as conventions bring visitors to Dubuque. 2022 is trending after pandemic took its toll on the industry. With multiple conferences at Dubuque's event centers and hotels in the coming months, local leaders hope the gradual return of large gatherings will bolster the area's tourism season. The International Snowmobile Congress wraps up today at Grand River Center, drawing more than 400 attendees. This week, the Convention Center will welcome more than 600 visitors for the Iowa Association of Business and Industry annual Taking Care of Business Conference, at which Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds is slated to speak. Dubuque will play host to several other events this summer, poised to draw attendees from a wide range of areas, from a state gathering of county auditors to a rally of Harley-Davidson motorcycle enthusiasts. The busy schedule is one more sign of a local tourism industry that is bounding back from the COVID-19 pandemic, according to Julie Kronledge, Vice President of Sales for Travel Dubuque. While it was pretty quiet in 2021, we've definitely seen a rebound in 2022. Our hotels that offer meeting services are seeing some really good local and regional corporate groups coming in. And we know when we will fill the convention center, the impact is remarkable. To the entire city is remarkable. Andrea Wiley, volunteer with Iowa State Snowmobile Association and chairperson for this year's International Snowmobile Congress, said this marks the fourth time that Iowa has hosted this event. There's lots of different avenues for tourism here, she said, noting that attendees visited the Field of Dreams movie site in Dyersville on Thursday evening. We like to showcase Iowa when we have the Congress, and Dubuque is the first city in the state, so we thought it would be a good venue. It just had everything that we needed to be able to make a successful event. Jack Haskin, president of CEO of Jackson Manufacturing in Maquoketa and current board chair for the Iowa Association of Business and Industry, said the Taking Care of Business Conference has been held in Dubuque multiple times, most recently in 2017. ABI members love Dubuque, he said. They see the success story that we have here and just what a great city Dubuque is. The ABI conference will include networking workshops, guest speakers, and industry tours, along with time for visitors to local attractions such as Eagle Point Park, Matthias Ham House, and Steeple Square. It's nowhere near pre-COVID times, but we are seeing an increase, she said, adding that convention attendance is still somewhat dampened as people continue to take advantage of virtual options. It's definitely getting better. Not quite normal, but getting better. Dwight Hopfoff, general manager of Hotel Julian Dubuque, said the hotel is seeing strong bookings for local, regional, and state groups. I think that there's a returning faction of corporate-style business, although I think it's still sporadic in regards to large events. There's more smaller corporate stuff that's starting to happen. Whether it's an international gathering or a regional conference, Hopfoff said inbound travel to any area hotel or conference center benefits the rest by increasing compression in the local market. When one hotel is booked solid, additional travelers are pushed to find other lodging, and hotels often can sell their few remaining rooms at a higher rate. The more travel into a community, the better time for all the hotels and the restaurants and the lounges and the gas stations, because travelers bring money with them, and they spend it, he said. Quan Lage said the Iowa State Association of County Auditors will hold its summer conference at Hotel Julian later this month, and the North American Trainers Association will return to Dubuque Regional Airport for its annual training event featuring vintage military aircraft in late July. Also in July, Hotel Julian will host the first regional Mid-America Harley Owners Group Rally, a gathering of Harley-Davidson motorcycle enthusiasts. Hopfuff said more than 900 people are registered to attend the event, hailing from 32 U.S. cities and Canada. I knew every hotel in the community has some level of riders that will be staying with them, he said. It'll be a big deal.
Our second article today is Cascading Effect. Manchester Whitewater Park is a major draw and an economic driver. Manchester, Iowa. Over the past several years, Jeff Phillips has seen a stretch of river that flows through downtown Manchester change dramatically. The Manchester residents started fishing in the Maquoketa River before city leaders transformed a more than 800-foot stretch of water into a community attraction that draws swimmers, tubers, kayakers, and anglers from across the region and even the country. Manchester Whitewater Park features 6 18-inch drops that create a whitewater effect, making it a popular spot on warm summer weekends. In the summertime, this whole thing will be packed with people swimming, fishing, kayaking, tubing, Phillips said. He considers the Whitewater Park a significant improvement over what was there previously. And the fishing is better now, too. It's definitely got more people out on the river, Phillips said. There wasn't really much here before. It has been more than a decade since community leaders first started floating ideas for the Whitewater Park, and 7 years since it opened to the public. The project turned what once was an underutilized area of town into a popular amenity with wide-ranging impacts on the city. The Whitewater Park, billed as the largest in Iowa and the Midwest, has been a force to bring people into the community, helping put Manchester on the map and providing a boost to local businesses. It's changed us in a sense that we have what I would consider a major attraction now, said City Manager Tim Vick. On the river, a variety of visitors took in the Whitewater Park on a recent weekend afternoon. One family gathered around picnic tables at the shelter by the river, while several more passed by on the sidewalk, wearing their swimsuits and carrying inner tubes to the start of the stretch of whitewater features. Meanwhile, other visitors relaxed on swinging benches along the sidewalk or played on a musical instrument installation. Farther down the river, more people gathered on the rocks along the bank, seemingly to watch as tubers tried to stay afloat as they navigated the drops. We've always wanted to do this for the last couple of years, and this is the first time the weather's been right to give it a try, said Nick Glue of Marion, who visited the Whitewater Park with his family and his sister-in-law's family. Glue grew up in Manchester and came back with his family to camp for the weekend, stopping by the Whitewater Park on a Sunday afternoon. The two dads in the group floated the entire length of the Whitewater Park while the kids stuck to the last drop because of the high flow in the river. I thought it was super fun, said Leah Glue 13. Once you go down and you splash in the biggest part, it's the best feeling ever. Tiara Mull, 17, of Marion, also visited the Whitewater Park during a camping trip with her family. She tubed through the Whitewater Park twice and was contemplating whether to make a third run. I just wanted to do it so bad, Tiara said. I've been bugging them all day to come out here. Everybody else fell off, not me. I'm a professional. Amy Welcher of Ankeny and her son Bennett, 13, sat on one of the benches watching people tube down the river. It's nice just to sit back and watch, Bennett said. It's nice just to watch the water go down. The idea for the Whitewater Park was born more than a decade ago as part of the grassroots Good to Great initiative, which brought community members together to develop city projects. As a committee looked at ways to enhance the community's waterfront, the idea for a whitewater park bubbled to the top. At the time, the stretch of river featured a lowhead dam, and the area wasn't particularly well used. I think a lot of people just wanted to see the area cleaned up and improved, said Ryan Wicks, a civil engineer in Manchester, who was a member of the committee. Part of the allure of the idea was that it would be a unique offering for the community. Iowa didn't have any whitewater parks at the time, with Charles City opening the first one in 2011 and Elkader opening another in 2014. Members of the Good to Great group brought a proposal to city council members who agreed to fund a portion of the project if the group could secure the rest of the money with fundraising and grants. A campaign group went door to door to solicit private donations and ended up raising about $500,000. The interest varied wildly, Vic said. We had some people that were a little concerned that they were going to lose their fishing habitat right in front of the dam. We had a number of people who were excited about the opportunities this presented. Work on the project kicked off in 2014, and the Whitewater Park opened in 2015. The initial project would end up costing about $2.2 million, paid for with private donations, $745,000 in grants, and close to $1 million in general obligation bonds. While there was a bit of a learning curve for visitors at first, the park quickly became a popular spot for tubers who brought out all the inner tubes at local stores. It really did turn into a destination for people that were interested in playing on the water, Vic said. A second phase of work totaling close to $1 million added a riverfront park, pavilion, parking, and other amenities. The work was funded with close to $200,000 in grants, $5,000 in donation, and about $760,000 from a general obligation bond. The park now boasts a shelter, shower and restroom facilities, a trail, a spot where visitors can inflate inner tubes, and a musical instrument installation. What we had before this was even in place, you might see one person down there a couple days a week. But now that this has been in place, it's not uncommon to see 20, 30 kids out on a nice warm day, Vic said.
Dubuque students' soap business showcased at Hy-Vee Summit. Taylor Hilken, 13 years, earns a $1,000 prize for her business, Crazy Goat Soap. When Taylor Hilken started milking goats at her uncle's farm, she loved caring for the animals, but she was too short to do the job effectively. So the 13-year-old Dubuque residents decided to start smaller, by purchasing her own dairy goat, Fern. The goat's former owner had called her the crazy goat because she kept jumping the fence, and she was more than a little cantankerous. But before long, Fern had warmed up to Taylor and soon was producing a gallon of milk a day. When the bottles began filling up the Hilkins fridge, Taylor and her mother decided to start using some of the raw goat milk to make soap. "We tried a lot of different recipes until we found one we liked," Taylor said. "Since then, we slowly expanded, selling more things and creating more products." 2 years later, Taylor's business, Crazy Goat Soap, is thriving. She recently competed in a business summit hosted by Hai Lee, earning a $1,000 prize. Taylor said the soap-making process begins by freezing goat milk and mixing lye into it. Then she adds coconut, grapeseed, and olive oils, along with beeswax. The soap is then poured into a mold to harden for a day or two. Finally, Taylor removes it from the mold to dry for at least 6 weeks before packaging. In April, Taylor applied for the chance to present Crazy Goat Soap at Hai Lee's Opportunity, Inclusive Business Summit for Minority and Women-Owned Businesses, acting on the encouragement of her science teacher, Roosevelt Middle School teacher Becky Millam. Millam described Taylor as a quiet, organized, and helpful student who always put her best foot forward. In early May, Taylor learned she had been selected one of 10 contestants to pitch her products at the summit in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, for the chance to win up to $25,000. "The judges were really nice and kept helping me through it and told me I was doing a great job," she said. "We got to listen to a lot of presentations from people who work for Hai Lee or have worked with them in the past. Although she didn't walk away with the top prize, she did earn $1,000, which she will use to purchase another dairy goat. She also met store representatives at the summit and soon will talk with Hy-Vee store managers about the possibility of selling her soaps in their stores. It all comes from a dream," Taylor said, "but it is a lot of hard work." Crazy Goat Soap is available in several local shops and markets, including Dirt Road Darlings in Dubuque and the Dubuque Farmers Market. Products can also be ordered online at crazygoat.com.
And on the editorial page, first, our view. Pause ending free school lunches for all. A change coming at month's end will put an additional financial burden on many families of school-age children at the start of the next school year. Just about the last thing that families need right now. The federal program that allowed students across the country to receive free meals during the past 2 years soon will end. And local officials worry that families will feel the strain amid an ongoing rise in food prices. With the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, the National Food and Nutrition Service allowed schools to extend the free, seamless summer option meal program into the regular school year. The change eliminated the need to collect meal payments from all students, regardless of income. But after the waiver expires June 30th, eligibility for free and reduced price meals again will be based on income level, with families required to apply for the discontinued meals in most cases. Here's a case of members of Congress failing to see what's right in front of them. COVID-19 might be less of a threat, but food prices have jumped about 9% since last year, and gas prices have increased to record levels. Lawmakers should push pause and consider extending the exemption at least another year. Many educational institutions and politicians are calling for the free lunches to be permanent. And it's hard to argue with a plan that, number one, makes sure two healthy meals a day are readily available to every child entering a school. Number two, eliminates the issue of making it obvious to kids which students need financial assistance. And number three, cuts out all the paperwork associated with administering a free lunch program by income level. But the other side of the coin is the concern about taxpayer dollars going to pay for lunches for families that can well afford to purchase their own. The free and reduced lunch program that served school children prior to the pandemic already cost $14 billion a year, and that was before it was free to all. Another year would provide time for a realistic assessment of the cost of this program versus the previous program that provided assistance on a sliding scale for families in need. Additionally, if we revert to assisting only those who can show need, the scale likely will need to be recalibrated to take into account how much more people are challenged right now with inflation. As President Joe Biden and Congress seek ways to address the soaring prices crippling Americans, here might be one simple extension that could provide a safety net to at least ensure nutritious food is available for kids. Several states like Minnesota have already decided to provide free meals for all kids. In Iowa, the Des Moines Public School District will continue to serve free meals to all kids at least through the fall. For school districts already struggling with how to best spend instructional dollars, this isn't another financial burden they need. Congress should extend the expanded lunch program at least temporarily, crunch the numbers, and see if there's a compromise. Whatever happens, decision makers must err on the side of investing in the well-being of all students.
Other view, we do life together. Let's lift each other, by Liang Chi Wei. Recently, while talking about how we work with our colleagues and others during trying and good times, my good friend Renee Pope with Medline Industry said, "We do life together." Reflecting on my years of service at Northeast Iowa Community College, that statement resonates with me deeply. At NICC, anyone can walk through our doors and seek services. We try to meet people where they are in life, and that means understanding how their life situation could impact their learning journey. Most importantly, we collaborate with family members, nonprofit partners, and businesses to support our learners through programs and services. It is so true when Walt Whitman admonished us, "Be curious, not judgmental." Everyone has a story. How do we listen with no assumptions? I remember Jim, not his real name, who came to us during one wintry day, homeless and wondering about his life ahead. With help from a nonprofit agency, he had a place to stay. Jim enrolled in our Opportunity Dubuque training program, a partnership with the Greater Dubuque Development Corps. A few months later, on graduation night, Jim held up his certificate and said, "I have knowledge, I have hope. I have kept those six impactful words in my heart all these years." Families and friends are important in our graduate's completion. Jane, not her real name, and her parents were so happy during one of our celebrations. Her mother told us that Jane wanted to quit the program shortly after starting. She felt she could not do it. "Why don't you go back for one more day?" was her mother's encouragement. Over time, there were many one more days, and they kept Jane in the program. Some students can only take one small step given their situation. Those small steps can lead to their successful completion. Mahatma Gandhi said, "The future depends on what we do in the present. NICC will continue to collaborate with our K through 12 schools to help our young learners be more college and or career ready. Meeting the workday workforce needs of our businesses remains a priority through enhancing our programs, adding new in-demand ones, and creating pathways to accommodate our diverse learners. Addressing child care, transportation, housing, poverty, language proficiency, and other issues of our students will be ongoing. We believe in supporting our students to commit to complete, to complete, to compete. As a college of the community, 85% of those we serve live in our 5,000 square mile district. Our mission is to improve lives, help to drive business success, and enhance our community's vitality. My colleagues and I have been blessed with unwavering support from our communities. I could not be more grateful. Together, we look for the good, to be the good, and to do the good. Let's continue to do life together and lift each other."
You are listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Your reader is Jackie
and Pat.
If you have any comments on this or any IRIS program, please call 243-6833 or toll free at 877-404-4747. And don't forget, this and many other IRIS programs are available from our website at iowaradioreading.org. Now we return to the Telegraph Herald. And now from the obituaries, John K. Freiberger, Piasta, Iowa. John Carl Tubby Freiberger, 73, of Piasta, Iowa, passed away suddenly at home of an apparent heart attack. Visitation for John will be held from 1 to 7 p.m. on Sunday, June 12, 2022, at the Reef Funeral Home. Visitation will also be held from 9 to 10:30 on Monday at the funeral home, Reif Funeral Home at 894 Piasta Street. Funeral services for John will be held at 11 p.m. Monday, June 13, at Holy Family Catholic Church in New Mallory, Iowa, with Reverend Rodney Allers officiating. Burial will follow in Holy Family Cemetery. John was born on August 27, 1948, to John and Helen Freiberger in Piasta. He graduated from St. John the Baptist at 8th grade, deciding he got all the book learning he needed, and farmed with his parents until he was drafted into the U.S. Army July 11, 1968, to serve in Vietnam, from which he received his honorable discharge on July 1, 1974. He went on to meet the love of his life, Janice Schmidt of Sherrill, Iowa. On September 15, 1973, they were united in marriage at St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church in Sherrill, Iowa. Together, they raised a family and farmed just a mile south and a mile east of Piasta, as he would say. Everyone was welcome at the Freiberger Farm, where the education was free and the beverages were cold. John worked hard, tending the business, delegating much of the work around the farm. He was a true Iowa farmer who loved his red tractors, farming, his land, and his current dog, Maggie. The world lost one of the greatest nonprofit guidance counselors and life coach. He always made sure no one was standing around soaking up the good air. One of his favorite hobbies was to BS on the phone for hours, and he had a unique gift of assigning nicknames. John touched many lives with his life lessons on common sense and use of colorful language. John will be remembered for many things, such as his fashion sense. He was often spotted with a toothpick behind his ear, some holes in his t-shirts for his insulin shots, and a Uthoff hybrid seed corn hat. He enjoyed teaching his 7 grandchildren a variety of life skills, and they taught him how to use his cell phone. If anything was learned from John, it would be that you don't need a driver's license to drive, that hay is sold by the ton, not by the bale, to spend your money so you have a reason to work, and finally, to find yourself an ugly girlfriend so nobody tries to steal her. John was a member of Holy Family Parish in New Mallory. He was a member of the Centralia Veterans of Foreign Wars, post number 13. John is survived by his wife Janice, his son Matthew, his daughter Sarah, and Amanda of Hart Farley, 7 grandchildren. He is preceded in death by his parents, a brother in infancy, father and mother-in-law, Melvin Boots and Virginia Trixie Schmidt, and 2 nephews, Jamie Potterbaum and Carl D. Smurf Freiberger, for whom he coined the nickname. Anyone unable to attend may send cards to the Reif Funeral Home, Attention John K. Freiberger, Post Office Box Number 1, Piasta. A video tribute may be viewed and online condolences left for the family at the funeral home website.
Kathleen M. Nelson. Kathleen M. K. Manders Nelson, age 82, of Dubuque, passed away at 6:58 p.m. on Monday, June 6th, at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital to celebrate Kay's life. Family and friends may visit from 11 until 12:45 p.m. on Tuesday, June 14th, at the Bear Funeral Home at 1491 Main Street. Services will be held at 1 p.m. on Tuesday at Bear Funeral Home. Burial will be at Mount Calvary Cemetery. Kay was born on August 25, 1939, in Dubuque, Iowa, daughter of Irvin and Bernice Speak Manders. Kay was a lifelong Dubuque resident. She was united in marriage to the love of her life, Ronald Nelson, on August 22, 1959, in Dubuque. The couple were blessed with 4 children and 50 wonderful years of marriage before Ron passed away on September 11, 2009. Kay was always a hard worker and devoted to her career, working at Merrimack and the John Derrick Dubuque Works. She also volunteered countless hours with the Salvation Army. In her free time, Kay enjoyed traveling and occasionally trying her luck at the casino. She also liked to take some time to sit quietly and read her latest book and work on her latest crafting project. Spending time with her family was what truly brought Kay the greatest joy. She loved family get-togethers and especially enjoyed spending time with the grandchildren. Kay was a great example of a devoted wife and mom and grandma who worked hard and always made sure her family was taken care of. We will miss her tremendously. Kay was preceded in death by her parents, her husband, Ronald Nelson, 1 son, Patrick Nelson, a sister, Betty Miller, a brother, 3 brothers, Michael, Mickey Manders in infancy, Kenny Manders and Tom Frost, and a son-in-law, Jeff Hansen. Kay's family would like to thank the doctors, nurses, and staff at the ICU at Unity Point Health Finley Hospital for the wonderful care they provided Kay. Also, a very special thanks to her grandson, Mike, for always taking care whatever Kay needed. The family will thankfully receive your support through getting greeting cards and memorials in Kay's memory, which may be mailed to Bear's Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, Dubuque, Iowa. Attention, Kay Nelson and family.
Carla A. Josephs, Appleton, Wisconsin. Carlin Ann Josephs, age 63, of Appleton, passed away peacefully at home on Monday, May 30th, 2022, after a courageous battle with pancreatic cancer. She was born on November 1st, 1958, in Dubuque, Iowa, to Marie Williamson. Carla spent the younger years of her life in the Dubuque area before relocating to Appleton, where she graduated from Appleton East High School in 1976 and then attended cosmetology school. She married the love of her life and soulmate, Michael Pike Josephs, on November 20th, 1976, and they became inseparable for the next 42 years. Carla made a living in the banking industry until retiring to care for her spouse until he passed in 2019. Carla enjoyed spending time with her family, going on trips far and close, especially to her home away from home at Evergreen campsites for the past 35 years. She adored watching her grandkids' various activities and spending time at friends and neighbors' bar, cheering on the Packers, Badgers, or Brewers. Carla cherished time with friends bowling, shooting darts, dancing, and even sometimes singing karaoke. Carla was fond of shopping, especially for clothes and jewelry. It was in her caring nature to always be thinking of others, so she often surprised you with a gift, just because. There was never a holiday that she didn't dress up or decorate for. Even before the first snowfall, you would find every room of the house decorated with her large collection of snowmen. She also loved flowers, hummingbirds, the color purple, and Almond Joy candy bars. When she had some time to relax, she would online shop, do puzzles, crosswords, and watch Pimple Popper, Chopped, or Hallmark movies. Carla was an incredible human being that touched the lives of many. She developed a multitude of everlasting friendships throughout her life and could have a conversation with anyone. Carla will always be remembered for being the life of the party, her spunkiness and her famous oil checks. Her laugh and smile were big and contagious, and her passion to be the best daughter, wife, mother, grandmother, aunt, cousin, and friend showed and was what she was most proud of. Survivors include her children, Joshua, Jessica, Justin, her grandchildren. Visitation for Carla will be held on Friday, June 17th, at Menasha's West Gore Funeral Home from 2 until the time of service at 4 p.m. Private family interment will take place at a later date. The family would like to thank her doctors, nurses, and other staff at Theta Care Hospice, Theta Care Cancer Center, Theta Care Regional Medical Center, Appleton, and Encircle Health for the compassionate care they gave to Carla during her fight with cancer. An extra special thank you to her sister-in-law, Sue Wynant, and longtime friend, Wendy Krull, for all their love and help to care for Carla. Additional thanks go to family and friends for your support, prayers, and love. Carla will be missed forever, but we know she will live in the hearts of all who shared their grief with us during this difficult time. There's no doubt she will bring her spice to heaven and make it a better place.
Marvin J. Funky, Dyersville, Iowa. Marvin J. Funky, age 84, of Dyersville, Iowa, passed away on June 10, 2022, at the University of Iowa Hospital. Visitation for Marvin will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, June 14, 2022, and from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Wednesday, June 15, at the Reef Funeral Home in Dyersville, Iowa. Massive Christian burial for Marvin will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, June 15, at St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church in Dyersville, with Father Tyler Raymond presiding. Burial will be held in St. Francis Xavier Cemetery in Dyersville. Marvin Joseph Funky was born on November 15, 1937, the youngest of 10 children to Lawrence and Emma Funky in Worthington, Iowa. After attending a country school during his younger years, Marvin graduated from St. Paul High School in 1956. He served in the United States Army Reserve for 6 years, attaining the rank of EE Specialist. On May 14, 1960, Marvin was united in marriage to Rose Lee Sherlock in St. Paul Catholic Church in Worthington, Iowa. Marvin worked in construction as a skilled carpenter for over 40 years and belonged to the Carpenters Local 678 Union. He enjoyed watching sporting events, working on his vegetable garden, playing cards, and spending time with his family. Marvin was a faithful member of St. Francis Xavier Parish. Marvin is survived by his wife, Rosie Lee, his children, Mark, Diane, Jeff, Tim, and several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Sister-in-law, Kathleen Funky of Dubuque, Kay Funky of Monticello, and Elaine Conzen of Dyersville. Marvin was preceded in death by his parents, his siblings. Online condolences may be sent to the family at www.revivefuneralhome.com.
Gerald J. Kirby. Gerald J. Kirby, 72, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away peacefully on Friday, June 10th, at Luther Manor. Visitation for Jerry will be held from 3 to 6 p.m. on Monday, June 13th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. A celebration of Jerry's life will be held at 6 p.m. at the funeral home, with Sharon Bainbridge as officiant. Military honors will follow, accorded by the United States Army Iowa National Guard. Jerry was born in Dubuque on March 23, 1950, the son of Joe and Mary Kirby. He graduated from Dubuque Senior High School in 1968. Jerry served in the U.S. Army from 1975 to 78. His duties placed him in Germany, where he proudly served our country. Jerry married Lynn Robinson on May 24, 1980. Together, they shared over 42 wonderful years. Jerry was employed for 25 years at Eagle Window and Door, where he took on many tasks. Jerry loved the Chicago Bears, Cubs, and the Iowa Hawkeyes. He enjoyed watching all sports, especially golf, in recent years. Jerry spent many mornings at Sunshine Family Restaurant, getting his favorite breakfast. He liked to relax with his Western shows and also enjoyed trying his luck with crossword scratch-off tickets. Jerry's family was very important to him, and he loved spending time with his grandchildren. He is survived by his wife Lynn, their children, Jason, Ryan, and Noah Kirby, his former wife Dorothy Vogt, their daughter Kathy, and many grandchildren. Jerry was preceded in death by his parents, brothers, Roger Butch Kirby, brothers-in-law, Don Kowalski and Jerry Robinson, along with many loved ones who have gone before him. The family would like to extend a special thank you to Dr. Salas, the Wendt Cancer Center Hospice of Dubuque, and Luther Manor for the exceptional care Jerry received over the years.
Vicki J. Stilson, Scales Mound, Illinois. Vicki Joanne Hendrickson Stilson died at home surrounded by family and friends on June 9th in Scales Mound at the age of 72. Visitation for family and friends will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, June 14th, and after 9:30 a.m. on Wednesday at the Miller Steinecke Funeral Home in Scales Mound, where services will be held by 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday. Burial will be in the Scales Mound Township Cemetery. Vicki was born on May 27, 1950, to Luther and Myrtle Hendrickson. She graduated from Scales Mound High School in 1968. She married Jacob Stilson on May 2, 1970. He preceded her in death in 1994. Vicki worked as a hairdresser for many years until 1984, when she went to work for Honeywell until her retirement in 2016. After her retirement, she went to work at the Zephyr Depot, where she met many great people with whom she enjoyed spending her retired days. Over Vicki's lifetime, she welcomed 2 children, 8 grandchildren, 1 great-grandson, and several nieces and nephews into her life. Vicki's children remember her as a gentle, caring, loving mother and grandmother who always was very supportive in everything they chose to do. She was known to make delicious, perfectly spaced M&M cookies and scotcheroos, and they will be missed. Vicki is survived by 2 sons, Sean and Greta Stilson, their children, Ty Stilson, Jared, Kayla, Sophie, Maggie, their children. She is preceded in death by her parents, her husband Jacob Stilson, grandson Jacob Stilson, her father-in-law Lee Stilson, and her mother-in-law Carolyn Stilson, her sisters. The family would like to thank Hospice of Dubuque, and a special thank you to Karen and John Sincox and Candy Schreck for caring for her.
Charles J. Mason, Bradenton, Florida. Charles Charlie J. Mason, 79, of Bradenton and formerly of Marquette, Iowa, died on Saturday, November 13th. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, June 17th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in McGregor, Iowa, where services will follow. Inurnment will follow services in the church cemetery. Thornburg Grau Funeral Home and Cremation Service of McGregor is assisting the family.
Charles J. Nyans, Cascade, Iowa. Charles J. Nyans, 65, of Cascade, passed away Thursday, June 9th at Acura Healthcare in Cascade, Iowa, after a courageous battle with cancer. Visitation for Charles will be held from 2 to 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, June 14th at the Rife Funeral Home in Cascade. Services will follow at 7, and burial will be held at a later date in Calvary Cemetery in Cascade. He was born in February 28, 1957, in Monticello, Iowa, son of George and Celestine Mantaroc Nyans. He attended the former Aquin High School in Cascade, Iowa. He was employed in American Iowa MFG in Cascade for several years. He is a member of St. Matthias Parish in Cascade. He is survived by his children, Casey and Callista, 1 grandson, a brother, a sister, as well as many nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his parents, two sisters, and a brother. Dad will forever be remembered for his witty sense of humor and his kind heart. He was an outdoorsman and enjoyed squirrel hunting, trapping, fishing, and raising his yearly flock of meat chickens. Chuck was a loving father, grandfather, brother, uncle, and friend. The family would like to thank Hospice of Dubuque, especially Jenny, Megan, and Ryan, Acura Healthcare, and Sherry Kelchin for all the wonderful care given to Chuck. Also a special thank you to Steve Garrity for being a friend and always being there for him.
Deborah A. Graff. Deborah A. Debbie Graff, age 70, of Dubuque, passed away at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, June 7th, at Dubuque Specialty Care. In keeping with her wishes, there will be a memorial service held at a later date. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery following cremation. Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street, is assisting the family. Debbie was born on January 2, 1952, in Cedar Rapids, daughter of Edward and Mary Graff. Debbie's mother passed away when she was only 4 years old. Her grandmother Helen and her uncle Jerome Pendergrass stepped in to help raise her and her brother. Debbie was a hard worker who put her talents to good use as a receptionist with Medical Associates in Dubuque. She was a faith-filled woman and a longtime member of the Church of the Nativity. In her free time, Debbie enjoyed creating beautiful quilts, tending to her gardens, and tracing her genealogy roots. Debbie also had a great love for all of God's creatures, especially the chickens and dogs. She has owned and trained many dogs throughout the years. Debbie had a kind soul and will be deeply missed by all who knew and loved her. Those left to cherish Debbie's memory include several cousins. She was preceded in death by her parents, her grandmother who raised her, Helen Bernard Scharfhoff, and a brother John. A special thank you to all of Debbie's friends, family, and neighbors for all of their friendship and support. The family will thankfully receive your support through greeting cards and memorials in Debbie's memory, which may be mailed to Bear Funeral Home, 1491 Main Street.
Jacob W. Beam. Jacob W. Beam, 17, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away on June 7, 2022. A funeral service will be held at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, June 14th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory. Family and friends may visit from 3 to 6 p.m. on Tuesday at the funeral home. He was born on July 8, 2014, son of Melissa Beam and William Hemming, Jr. He worked at Link Hydraulic and Motivation Lawn Service as the owner. Jacob was a motivated hard worker, and he had his own lawn care business that he was very proud of, Motivation Lawn Service. He played basketball and football, loved riding motorcycles with Nathan, hanging out with Caleb and Chase, and fishing with Sean. He loved to shoot hoops with Emily and pick on her. He is survived by his mother, Melissa Siegert, his father, William Hemming, and his sister, maternal grandparents, Bob and Edward Beam, aunts, Linda, Jennifer, Crystal, uncles, Rich, David, Dan, Mike, several cousins. He was preceded in death by his grandfather, William Hemming, Sr., grandmother, Eileen Hemming, and his aunt, Diane Hemming.
That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for June 12th, 2022. I'm your reader, Jackie.
I'm Pat.
Support for this reading comes from the DuPaco R.W. Hafer Foundation. The Telegraph Herald can be heard each weekday at 2 p.m. All programs heard on IRIS are intended solely for the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions or comments on this or any IRIS program, please call our office toll-free at 877-404-4747. Thanks for listening.